Thursday night edition of the Dunk Time Basketball Podcast. Got a little news to get to. Then we got to talk about a very intriguing offseason for the Denver Nuggets, a team with a ton of assets and a ton of space and a pretty damn good team. When you got Nikola Jokic making the minimum for next year, that helps matters. And then we also want to talk about Lauri Markkanen, the Arizona power forward prospect, one of the best shooting seven-footers that has ever played in the NCAA. Let's break right into some news to start with here. Most intriguingly, we had talked about Travis Schlenk and his status as kind of the skeptic in the room with the Warriors. Jerry West, the other one of those guys, both of them are going to be gone now. We'll see if that actually affects anything. Probably not, because, you know, they have four all-stars. But Schlenk, it seemed like Hawks owner Tony Ressler's comments that they would do whatever it took to re-sign Millsap did not really fit with that skeptical approach that Schlenk brings, because re-signing Millsap for a team that really, you know, was first round playoff fodder to a huge max deal didn't make much sense. And then Schlenk had some interesting comments today to Chris Vivlamore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, I found the wording interesting as well. So basically he said, we're going to make Paul our best offer. Will he have better offers? I don't know. And when you have full bird rights on a guy and you can offer 5 years, that's notable.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, a 5-year, $205 million deal for the 32-year-old Millsap would certainly be a bad contract by the end, but he will in fact have other suitors, as Schlenk realized, and one of those we're going to talk about pretty soon with the Nuggets. But I think that's even if they lose Millsap, I think that's actually a great sign for the Hawks that is probably going to be his approach. Other news, the Sixers exercising their option for this year at the minimum on Robert Covington. That was a hinky special, the 4-year deal at the minimum with some guaranteed money up front, and then a 4th-year team option on the end that was also non-guaranteed. So they exercised that option. They could still have him non-guaranteed. They will, of course, guarantee it because he's an excellent player. And this wasn't one of those ones because he already has 4 years of experience where it was a question of let's either make him a restricted free agent or keep him under contract really cheaply for another year. He would have just been unrestricted had they not exercised it. So this was pretty much a no-brainer. What else we got?
The front office intrigue in Milwaukee has led to another interesting decision, because Arturis Karnisovas, who was a finalist reportedly by Woj for the Milwaukee job, got promoted to general manager of his current team, the Denver Nuggets, who also promoted Tim Connelly from general manager to president of basketball operations.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We don't know whether Karnisovas would have actually been hired in Milwaukee or not. He reportedly withdrew from the process. Good job by his agent, Spencer Breaker at Kauffman Sports, to get this promotion and presumably more money. Doesn't sound like he's necessarily have more responsibility, but he did well there. And now it still sounds like it's been a fractious process for the Bucks ownership as far as who they want to hire. Obviously Justin Zanuck seems like kind of the last man standing, with Wes Wilcox, that was reported not as favored in that process as well. So maybe what they're going to do, I mean, I might consider this too, is just like, he's under contract right now, hold down that interim tag on him until you find out what happens with David Griffin in Cleveland. And then if Griffin goes back, all right, Justin Zanuck, you're elevated. Otherwise, we'll see if we can get in the mix for David Griffin.
I'm totally on board with that, especially given the unusual timing with Griffin's contract. So might as well kind of play it by ear. Zanuck is already doing their draft prep, so they can still use him in that role and then move on. The other piece of news that I thought was interesting, I don't think we need to go into the Jerry West thing too much, is from the Clippers. And so the Clippers are getting closer. It doesn't seem like it's all the way done to an agreement for an arena in Inglewood, which is in West LA.
Yeah, they will have, they're closing in on an exclusive negotiating agreement with the city of Inglewood. I'm not that up on exactly what that means, but certainly they're looking to do that. Their lease, I think, at the Staples Center runs all the way to 2024. Maybe they can get out of that a little bit earlier. But when you consider that we're only 7 years away from there now, and all the crap you have to go through in California to try and get something built, especially because it sounds like the Forum already in Inglewood, and who is not happy about, you know, it's been basically like rebranded as like a concert venue. They're not happy about another arena being down there, because that would presumably take a lot of their potential shows away. And so they're, I'm sure, going to try to do as much NIMBYism as they can, as their statement indicated, to try and prevent this. So the fight's not over yet, but it's just simply the fact that the Clippers really are trying to do this now. We know that for sure. There have just been whispers on this front, and that could affect some of their decisions in free agency, whether they're going to offer the full max to Chris Paul or Blake Griffin, whether they're going to offer no trades to Chris Paul or Blake Griffin. And if it seems like this team, if they feel like, hey, we need to keep having a good team here, even if it's not a true championship contender, just to kind of push the narrative for this new arena, who knows whether that would have an impact or not. What else we got?
Something that was, I don't know that I would necessarily say it was intriguing, just because players can just kind of flitter around this, but Paul George said that his expectation is that he's going to be a Pacer next season, and that he doesn't plan to talk to LeBron this summer. That always can change. That can change at the drop of a hat. But to get that sort of an idea, because for Paul George, there is a very real risk, and for, of course, the Pacers, of him in playing this whole season with them, because he is not eligible for a designated veteran extension right now. He could theoretically be eligible for a designated veteran contract next summer, but that's also when he can opt out and become an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I mean, basically, this is one of those ones where I would have liked to have actually heard the tape. Nate Taylor was at a celebrity softball game, and so it had some of these quotes where he said, well, I'm under contract with the Pacers, and my expectation is I'll be playing for them. So, I mean, I don't put any stock into his ultimate destiny based on these comments either way here. I think that's all we got in terms of news. Let's talk about both of our favorite up-and-coming squads, the Denver Nuggets offseason. They have basically two cap scenarios here. Danilo Gallinari will opt out of his $16.1 million that he's owed. They did a nice job of keeping him on the team for this long with the renegotiation and extension. But now the time has come for him to get paid. His cap hold is about $22.6 million. If they keep his cap hold on the books as a means of using bird rights to re-sign him, and I would be surprised if he got a deal starting at more than what that cap hold is. You could maybe shave a little off that by signing him first to a little bit less than that cap hold. We'll see what the market is like for him. But with that cap hold on the books, $14.8 million in space, not really a ton. That also would include their 14th overall draft pick that they have, and the restricted free agent cap hold of Mason Plumlee, which is $5.8 million. Or if they move on from Gallo, they could open up as much as $37.3 million in space with Plumlee still on the books as well.
And some could see that as, you know, first of all, that is a lot of money that they can spend, and that's a good thing. And you can also look at it and say, hey, a lot of the best players that Denver has drafted have been recent. And so a player that you draft recently is not going to be eligible for a big pay raise anytime soon. For example, Jamal Murray has another three seasons on a rookie scale deal. Wancho's the same, but they have two important guys that are going to get more expensive soon. One is Gary Harris. Gary Harris will be extension eligible this summer, so he'll be on the final year of his rookie scale deal. And then the other one is Nikola Jokic. Jokic has this structure that you talked about earlier with Robert Covington, but he has it with 3 years of experience. So what that means is if he has one more year on this minimum absolute bargain of a deal, but if they pick up his last year team option, then he is an unrestricted free agent in 2019. If they decline that, then he is a restricted free agent in 2018. And the most prominent example of this in recent time was Chandler Parsons. Chandler Parsons, the Rockets declined his option to make him a restricted free agent, and then he ended up leaving because he signed that offer sheet with Dallas and Houston didn't match.
Yeah, but Jokic is a lot better than Parsons was at that point, and I think it's going to be a no-brainer for them to decline the team option and keep him as a restricted free agent and work out a long-term deal with him. Another option that they could have as well would just be simply renegotiating and extending him as well with some of this cap space that they have. He's only been on the team for 2 years, so what you might see them do maybe would be exercise that option in conjunction with renegotiating and extending him. Rather than letting him get to restricted free agency, they could do that. They will not be able to renegotiate him until 3 years after he signed his contract, so he's already only been in the league for 2 years. But yeah, I mean, to me, you cannot take the chance that he's going to leave. And I mean, he's almost good enough that whatever offer he would get in restricted free agency, they would just match it anyway. So you might as well just like send him into restricted free agency. It's not worth it to, especially in a place like Denver where your cap space is not worth that much, to save money, keep him at the minimum for one more year, especially because he'll know that you could have given him a raise earlier and elected not to do so, then he's really going to be pissed off and he might be very interested in leaving. So I would expect them to make him a restricted free agent next summer. But so let's say they do that.
Well, and I want to mention one more thing. Yeah. He's young. He's only 22. And so that can get confusing for people with European guys because sometimes they come over when they're much older. So he is basically at the same age as a guy who went to college like for a year, I think is about right for him. And so you're not sitting there worrying about, oh, we're going to pay him into his 30s. Nope, not at all. He's going to be around his prime probably at the end of his next contract.
So, but what's important to remember overall here is, you know, he's probably going to make, if not the max, close to it, you know, pencil him in for $25 million a year starting in the summer of 2018. Gary Harris will be extension eligible. Have to imagine you're looking at over $15 million a year for him, if not maybe even more than that, as a two-way shooting guard who can defend one and two, shoot the ball well. So this is a team that is not very profitable, does not draw well. Maybe that'll start to change, but there it seems unlikely that they will be interested in paying the tax unless they take a very, very significant leap forward with the players that they have. And so they are a little constrained. I mean, they have $56 million bucks or so under contract for next year, and they could, if they moved off of Kenneth Faried's money, then it would be even less than that. Faried's making $13 million over the next 2 years each year. But if you think, hey, and obviously Harris and Jokic will have very small cap holds too, so you could spend a bunch of money this year and a bunch of money next year in free agency, but then you got to give these guys those raises and you're adding $45 million bucks maybe to that total, so you're almost right at the cap, and then you really only have another $20 million to work with. So I think even though they have this $37 million in space potentially if they move on from Gallo or he moves on from them, if you're going to take on long-term salary, they either would have to move Faried at some point, which would be in the last year of his contract for 2018, or you just not spend all of that $37 million. I mean, my approach would obviously be if you have a guy that you really like that you can spend that $37 million on, you should probably do it and then just work out having to dump some guys later if you have to. You know, Darrell Arthur is another guy that they could maybe move on from at that point, but they may not see it that same.
Yeah, when I did their offseason preview, I'm not sure if it's out yet. When I wrote the one for SI, I focused on this point of a team with potential can sometimes be the most dangerous time for a front office because you could be feeling pressure from a couple different directions and you just need to make sure that if you're going to spend money, you spend it on the right people and that you're judicious about it because it can go haywire really quickly. You and I both love where Denver is now. We like a lot of their talent, but they have to make this next step right because if they fall off here, then the team gets expensive. Then you start having to figure out, well, what are we going to do with our other assets? And so they can do this right, and they've hit so many of the other kind of smaller things. I've liked a lot of the moves that they've made and draft picks, and they have a lot of good contracts on their books, which is unusual for teams coming out of the summer of 2016. But that's more of like setting a good foundation. Now they just have to build. They have to have the right plans to build on top of it.
Yeah, and they've already. I mean, there definitely is pressure to make some money and get back to the playoffs. Although you would think that some of these promotions in the front office at least indicate that these guys have some job security, so maybe they don't feel as much pressure there, but they definitely screwed up already with this Plumlee trade. By, you know, part of the reason for doing that was trying to weaken Portland and make the playoffs this year, and obviously that didn't work, and Plumlee is not that good, and we'll talk about his free agency in particular as well. And by the way, this is yet another example of the more punitive luxury tax, like screwing over a smaller market team. Whereas like if this were a large market team, they would have no problem just spending all this cap space and dealing with it later. I had some people on Twitter were like pushing back to me on that. And I'm like, no, like you're not right on that. Like wait until you see how much luxury tax the Warriors are going to pay. And then, or the Nets paid, like, and tell me that like it's some big break on like a good team keeping their team together, or the Lakers or Clippers if they're ever good again. But that makes Plumlee and Gallo's free agencies very interesting because you're looking at it basically as a finite pool, right? There's a scenario under which if you re-sign Gallo, and then you bring back Plumlee at what he's going to want. We can talk about what that number is going to be. Now you're almost kind of locked in to this team a little bit. And maybe you could move Faried and you could move Arthur and you could open up a little bit more space that way. But to me, I think that Plumlee and Gallo, I know Gallo is a good offensive player. He scored pretty well this year, but he's just not good enough defensively for what this team needs. I think this, we've said this many times, but if you're going to have Nikola Jokic as your center, and you have to because he's a wonderful offensive player. I mean, they were... their numbers with Jokic in the lineup offensively are just absolutely insane, like top 2-3 level of offense type of team. You just have to me, put almost all your resources now into finding players who can defend at the other positions, and also just to have like a quality defensive backup center, which I do not consider Plumlee to be. So considering all those limitations, I mean, what are your offers going to be to Gallo and to Mason Plumlee?
My bigger concern for Gallinari is something that beyond the injury issue that you didn't focus as much on, and that's the timeline part of this. So Gallinari is older than the rest of their core, so if you give him a longer contract, 3 years or more, he's going to be less helpful at that point, and he's going to cost more money unless they can front load this deal. So I would be less interested in him as the Nuggets than as some other teams, and this is where it gets into his big cap hold, is that, you know, obviously you could renounce him and work within that realm if you really wanted to. That also might, I don't know, might hurt his feelings, depends on the guy. Some guys, like Nowitzki's been renounced a bunch of times, it didn't bother him at all. So I think with them, with Gallo, I would be thinking more in the like $10 to $13 million range. I could see another team offering him a little bit more.
Oh yeah, no way he's interested in that.
Right, exactly. And so, and I understand
he just
that.
Turned down $16 million, so he's expecting to get more than that, and he probably will. At it really quickly, I'm trying to look at who might be potential suitors for Gallo. You know, Brooklyn is one that might come to mind. Houston, maybe, if they move some things around a little bit. Indiana could probably use someone like him. Miami, if they strike out on Gordon Hayward. Minnesota, I think he would be a nice fit there. So he's going to have options for sure. Phoenix, he might help. Philly, his shooting could be useful. Sacramento, like he'll definitely get some offers. Probably not from good teams, but he'll get some offers.
And then with Plumlee, another guy who expectations will be a big challenge, because he was a starting center on a playoff team last season. And the fortunate part for Denver is that only matters if it matters to other teams, because they could come to an agreement with him before restricted free agency. That's possible. I think it's going to be harder to do that with him than most guys, but he could also very, very easily be left behind, A, because he's a restricted free agent, which is very, very dulling in this market because there are some good unrestricted guys, and because if they think that Denver's going to match, Denver just gave up a first round pick for this guy. Why are you going to tie up your cap space after you've already gone through the free agency process for a week for him? And so they can roll the dice. If I were them, I would almost definitely do that and just say, you know, hope that you maybe he really strikes out and is getting something more in the like $7 to $9 million range than eight figures. And I think that's very, really, very realistically possible.
Yeah, to me, especially because they already have Jokic too, remember, and this idea of playing those two guys together, I'm not a fan of. Hey, the numbers on that actually weren't bad last year, but I think in general it's not the way the league is going, and it's really very difficult to expect that you're going to stop anybody with Plumlee and Jokic in the lineup. I don't see Plumlee as a plus defender at the center position, and certainly not at the power forward position. To me, he's like a $6 million a year player. I'm probably lower on him than just about anyone in the league, as we've discussed, but like having him on the qualifying offer, which they have to, that's what everyone has to do. If you're a new listener, when you make someone a restricted free agent, you have to offer them a 1 year deal at a certain amount of money based on where they were in the draft. If they're a former first round pick, which Plumlee was, number 22 in the 2013 draft, and they can just accept that offer if they want to, 1 year guaranteed. You know, I think for Plumlee, it'll be like $5 million or something. I don't have exactly what the number is in front of me. And then, of course, he could be an unrestricted free agent at the end. Most unrestricted free agent or restricted free agents don't want to take that because it's only 1 year. You're taking a lot of injury risk, etc. He's going to be coming off the bench. I don't see his value increasing. I mean, and we got to remember about him too. I think he's already 27. I don't see him really getting much better, especially a guy who's relying a lot on athleticism, not a non-shooter. Yeah, so for Denver, if I could just get him on that 1 year deal, okay, fine. You know, and there's so many centers to go around in the league. I think you can always find another one, especially because you want to have Jokic playing 30 to 35 minutes a game as well. The question is just they've already invested these resources in him, and you know, they might think, hey, 4 years, $40 million, that's actually not that bad for him. But and we can play him a little bit with Jokic. You know, if he's like basically our backup big, we play him 25 minutes a game, that's not bad. But I think he's just not that good of a fit, and he's not that good of a player, and so it's just again a question of the opportunity cost there. I think they can do better with $10 million than to bring him in, especially because they have a lot of other needs that I think they need to address, specifically that defense on the wing.
They also don't have use it or lose it space. If they were where Detroit was last year, maybe you approach it that way because you say, hey, we're not going to be able to get anybody better than that, but they're going to have flexibility. So burning that flexibility on extra years for Mason Plumlee does not make sense to me.
Yeah. Realistically, I think they might make something like a 3-year, $20 million off, or $20 million a year offer to Gallo. And I think we could see something like a 4-for-40 deal for Plumlee. And Plumlee, like, given all the money that everyone got last year and the fact that, as you mentioned, he was starting for Portland and he averages so many assists. He's such a good passer.
Puts he'd up be some getting box less money stats. Than Myers Leonard. I'm sure he'd love that.
Less money than Myers Leonard, way less money than Mozgov. Like, it definitely will be galling for him. I expect that even if they make that offer to him, that he... And he hasn't made much money in his career, obviously. You know, he's probably made maybe 13, 14 million bucks in his career, if that. Maybe he ends up just taking that deal, realizing there's nothing better out there for him. I don't know what team would be making him an offer, as you alluded to. But even then, I mean, he's going to be pissed off at that the offer is that low. So we mentioned that. We can also mention that they have Mike Miller non-guaranteed at $3.5 million. His guarantee date is late July 12th. Maybe they could bring him back to the minimum. I know they really like his culture. I've related that story of him playing 3-on-3 and being a great influence when we saw them at Oracle Arena this year. But he... clearly not worth $3.5 million. He barely plays. They just kind of had that money last year because they were under the cap. And they actually, I mean, that's another thing to consider too. They could actually do that same thing that Utah did because they're only right now at, they've got like $10 million in space that they're just under the cap this year that they could use to take on some money if they wanted to around the draft. So Miller, I would expect that they would be gone. They also have, I said 14, I meant 13, 49 and 51 in this draft. A guy that I think fits for them, although he was not invited to the green room, so it's looking like he's not going to get drafted this high, is OG Anunoby out of Indiana, coming off a torn ACL, but crazy, like 7'5 wingspan, very athletic, can guard multiple positions, not a total non-shooter, pretty strong, would just, like, I mean, I don't know if he'd work out or not, but just what he's supposed to be is exactly what they would need to, when this team is going to be good in a couple of years.
I like that. I've advocated before for them to try to trade up for Jonathan Isaac, and they have a lot of, well, I mean, we don't know where Isaac's going to go, but they have a lot of these kind of small assets that I could see other teams really enjoying, and so they could use some of those or take on some salary, you know, could go in some other directions. So yeah, 13, I think that's possible. It's not necessarily the most likely thing in the world, but another element that I think is going to be important for this season and the way that Denver can shape the rest of the league more is how they approach their holdover talent. And the biggest guy for me there is Wilson Chandler. So Wilson Chandler was, you know, he was a part of this team. You know, he signed that renegotiation extension the same time as Gallo, and he's, you know, he's still there, and they need to have a conversation with him about what he wants to do as a free agent next summer, because if he's going to leave, I think you probably want to get something for him if you can get a good offer. And considering he is a legitimate 3-and-D guy, the offer should be strong if he actually hits the market.
I mean, he's not unbelievable at either of those things, but he's at least average at both, and that's still a pretty valuable player in today's league. And he's also really, especially if Gallo leaves, and Gallo I think even is more of a 4 these days, he's really the only 3, like natural 3 that they have in their roster. Everyone else is either like too small and skinny or really more of a combo forward or a 4. This team is crazy though, because even if you look at Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and Gary Harris as their 3 untouchable guys as their core, the number of assets that they have on this team that could be traded to try and bring in something else or just to move because they don't fit it anymore. Malik Beasley, Emmanuel Mudiay, Juancho Hernan Gomez. And I mean, I like a lot of these guys for them to just keep, Juancho in particular. And I think even Mudiay as well. Wilson Chandler, Will Barton, who has said he wouldn't take an extension there, probably wants to be traded, which I would understand. He's in line to be the 4th guard, and he's a pretty good scorer. He wants to up his value and play more. Darrell Arthur, I think when he's healthy, can still be a quality piece, maybe a little bit overpaid though at $8 million a year. And then Kenneth Faried, another guy who, both those last two guys probably failed in an A test, but all the others that above are really assets.
And you didn't include Jameer Nelson, and Jameer Nelson on a 1-year $4.7 million contract, if Denver wanted to go in a different direction for backup point guard, if they see Jamal as a 1, he'd get an asset back on the market, because there are going to be some bad backup point guard contracts this year.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that I wouldn't feel great about Jameer Nelson as my backup point guard, even though
you and I both, but Malone, calibrating the market's different.
Yeah, that's true too. So there's really a lot of things. You could see these guys being thrown into some larger packages as well. Wilson Chandler, I mean, I think you could expect to get a first round pick back from him there. Now, they've used up all of their surplus first rounders. They basically just have their own coming at this point. Barton probably doesn't get a first rounder to me either. And I think a lot of this too is going to depend on how they start the year, right? If they get into the trade deadline and they're just kind of piddling around and they're not really in playoff position, then yeah, let's move on from Barton. Let's move on from Wilson Chandler. If they're on track for the playoffs, it becomes a lot more difficult to trade those guys, even if, as you said, both in terms of their contract and age, maybe they don't fit the timeline of this team as much. But you can't have everybody just being 27 and in their prime all at once. You know, that's not necessarily realistic. And Beasley, another guy, I'm looking forward to watching him in summer league as well. You know, I think a guy who could maybe be a starting two in this league a couple years down the road, and a guy who they don't really have space for. You know, if they could make a trade for like the small forward version of what he is as a two guard, although the small forward version of that is more valuable, so probably not. But yeah, they have a lot of ammo here, and maybe someone like the type of guys I might be trying to do. I mean, there aren't really any obvious trade pieces that you would go after if you were them. I mean, Paul George doesn't really make sense because he's probably not going to stay there. But to me, you try to make an offer for, you know, a Chris Middleton or a Jay Crowder or a Robert Covington, whom, you know, you could maybe reach an extension with, because those guys, you'd have to just be creative and try to trade for a guy who it doesn't look like necessarily would get traded, because it doesn't really make sense to just flip Wilson Chandler for another guy who's kind of running down to the end. I mean, there aren't any better versions of what Wilson Chandler does who are running down to the end of their contract than Wilson Chandler. So it's either you're going to go for future assets and just continue to embrace the future and building exclusively around Harris, Jokic, and Jamal Murray, or you're going to just kind of hold on to these guys. I don't know that there are players under contract on other teams for long enough where it makes sense to move guys like Beasley or Wancho or Moutier or even maybe Wilson Chandler. Wilson Chandler seems like more likely you go for a draft pick, but it's very difficult if you're a team like them to trade some of these young assets for guys who are veterans who also are under contract long enough, who aren't bad contracts and are going to help you. Like, that player doesn't really exist.
It doesn't. I hadn't considered this guy before our conversation now, but I would love to see them, if depending on how their money goes, make a bid for Rodney Hood. Hood is probably not going to be moved by Utah, but he's going to be one of their other guys that needs a pay raise. I think he could fit in well with what Denver needs and what they have. So
yeah, you know, if Hayward moves on, that actually might make some sense if Utah just decides we're going to go a little bit younger. The only problem with Hood is I think he's not quite what they're looking for defensively.
True, but I think what you would want to pair him with is like another guy who's a better defender, but I think Hood can defend the worst swingman. That's not a problem. So if you get that other, sure, maybe OG Anunoby works out, somebody like that, and then you use that person in that role, and then you have him, and then you get a player who can weak side shot block at the four, and you can really have something. And the other guy, I just, because I can't control myself, that I have to mention in terms of their assets is Peter Cornelly. You more than almost anybody know my affection for French big men, but I thought he actually had something at summer league last year.
Yeah, he looked good. He is not impressed at all statistically in the French league this year. He's the number 53 pick in 2016, but maybe someone that they could bring over as well. They don't have a D league team though, so I would expect him to continue to get stashed. Free agents. Paul Millsap is the one who first comes to mind, especially with that news we talked about earlier with Atlanta potentially not offering him a max. Would you offer Paul Millsap a four-year, $152 million contract were you the Denver Nuggets?
Yes, I think I would. I wouldn't want to. You know, that would be on the upward bound. What would be amazing if they could pull it off would be a deal that started at his max and then dropped from there or was flat. That would be way better than having it go up, but that might not be realistic. So what Millsap brings to them is a lot of the things that Jokic lacks. So he can still space the floor. I think they would fit beautifully offensively, but Millsap is one of the best defensive fours in the entire league. So he can weak side shot block, he can rebound, and all of a sudden then you don't have to think about the Nuggets as being this run and gun team that's just trying to win 125 to 122. Now they can really start to beat people up.
Yeah, if they got Millsap, they could be trying to win 125 to 119.
There we go. That's winning basketball right there.
I don't think he would fix their defense. I still think that they would need a little bit more there. It'd be interesting to see whether he could play with Hernan Gomez and they could play Hernan Gomez at the three. I think Hernan Gomez is probably still more of a four, but he's had some success a little bit more than I would have expected guarding threes. I don't know if he can do that on a full-time basis or not, but especially if they still had Chandler as well. And maybe I think really if they were if they got Millsap, the math could work there, but then they really would have to dump Fareed and Arthur at some point, and those guys become quite superfluous as well once you've got Millsap. And the problem is Millsap's undersized, not a great shooter. So I think, you know, his defense is the more attractive part. And he's a good passer, a good cutter, you know, has played in a similar system in Atlanta to what they're trying to do here with all the passing bigs and a space floor. So that's all great. It's just, man, is that contract going to get bad by the end? But you're going to say, hey, as long as you can say this contract isn't going to cost us any of our young guys that we eventually need to extend, then you can feel okay about it, I think. And if they were able to get rid of Fareed, it's probably too far in the future to say, you know, in the fourth year of that contract, when he's making like $40 million a year, that that's not going to impact their spending a little bit. And I mean, I expect that he's like not even going to be a starter by that point, you know, so it's going to be some real negative value on the back end. But especially because they want to be good now, I think he's a quality pro. It works well in the locker room, help diffuse some any tension there with all these kind of young, talented guys who are on this team. I think I would probably bite the bullet and make that offer myself.
Another reason to support it is just that there aren't that many other guys that make sense for Denver to throw their money at. That's why I think you aim high and then aim low. I've used that approach for a series of teams this year because there are some other guys that would be interesting there, but just aren't really going to consider them. Serge Ibaka would be awesome. I don't think he's going to consider Denver. But when you get down into the lower groups, those players are kind of there for a reason, and a lot of them are older. The restricted market has a bunch of guys that I think would be fun on Denver, but you're not going to get really a value there, because if you're getting a value, the other team's going to match. So like Taj Gibson, Pat Patterson, those types of guys, like you don't need them. You don't need them as much. So you go for Paul Millsap, and then the two guard market.
And those guys are all redundant with what they have, I think, as right. well. I mean, Taj Gibson is basically like a center at this point. And he's although he's not going to be making $40 million 4 years from now, if you sign him to a 4 year deal, which you probably would, again, if you're going to get someone to go to what's been an NBA backwater lately, you're going to have to overpay. And that's going to end up being a worse contract, and he doesn't really move the needle for you now either.
I agree.
Quick
with
question
that.
Here, Danny. Where else is, I mean, because I have a bet with Bontemps on whether Paul Millsap would get a max contract or not. I said that he would not. Who else offers Paul Millsap a full max contract? It already sounds like Atlanta's not going to. Who's offering him that 4 year max? Minnesota? Would Minnesota do it?
Thibodeau seems like has a very good chance of doing it. If another person ran their team, maybe not. I don't think New Orleans.
He'd be a great
not
fit
New
there,
Orleans,
though.
Not Philly. I don't think Philly would. Though
and
Millsap.
Sacramento, probably not. It seems like it's a little bit of a new era. Maybe Phoenix?
Yeah.
That's a possibility. They would actually have to clear a little bit of space as well. Same thing with Minnesota.
And they drafted a bunch of fours. I mean, depending on how people see Dragan Bender. I could see them doing it, though. I mean, they went after LaMarcus.
He'd be a great fit in Miami as well. Orlando has always had their eye on him, but they would have to move some stuff around quite a bit.
Poor Aaron Gordon if they do that.
Yeah. Yeah. The Knicks, probably, you know, they need a point guard still. By the way, Derrick Rose said today, or PJ Armstrong said today, that Derrick Rose really wants to stay there. See whether that happens or not. You know, Brooklyn would have to move some things around to get to that full max of $35 million as well. I projected them at only $28 million in space right now. I don't think Boston would be interested in Millsap at his age. So there's not another obvious place that would offer him the full max if that's really what he wants. Maybe Denver could actually get him.
And he has a connection with the area because he grew up spending time there.
Let's say they can't get him. The names that stick out to me, Tabo Sefolosha and Tony Allen. I'm not interested in anyone who can't guard threes, but those two guys certainly can. And I think you can get away even with Allen. He's a solid cutter. You can get away with their lack of shooting because you have so much of a space floor with Jokic, and there's a lot of great cutting opportunities for those guys to make themselves available. PJ Tucker, a little bit more of a four than I would be thinking. I mean, really would like more of a pure three in terms of like the quick feet, but certainly, you know, if you're starting him at the three, he's not even, I think, like as good of a cutter and finisher as like Tony Allen would be. Gerald Henderson, if the Sixers for some reason, which I don't think they will, let him go, he's non-guaranteed for $9 million this year. And then you just look at like maybe some bigs if it doesn't work out with Plumlee. But there are not a lot of options of just even Luke Mbamute maybe would be another guy they could think about of just like pure defensive players at the three, and especially any of them that don't suck on defense. I highly doubt Andre Iguodala would be willing to go back there, although he would be a wonderful fit. They would have to massively overpay there, but that could maybe be a leverage play. I don't think he really enjoyed his time in Denver, but that was a different regime and a different head coach.
How would you like James Johnson there?
Not great. I think they have enough fours to me already. I think Juancho needs to play. I think Juancho could even be better than James Johnson as soon as this year. You're going to have to overpay for him as well. He's 30. He can't be your defensive stopper on the perimeter. He's repeatedly failed in that role in his career.
And they shouldn't have much interest in a straight two because they have so many other guys on roster. Yeah. If they still have just a ton of money after the first week, I could see them throwing a big offer sheet at KCP just because he'd be awesome next to Jamal Murray with the expectation that Detroit's going to match.
Yeah. Well, they already got Gary Harris. So
that's
like,
true.
He's basically a very
but
similar
can you
player.
Imagine? And, oh, man. I just think, yeah, you're right. Gary Harris is good, too. But I'm not envisioning him replacing Gary Harris. I'm just thinking you just wreck people.
No, they could be, if they strike out on some other guys, that you could maybe see them being like the team that gives out Porter a max offer sheet if Gallo goes elsewhere. But again, Porter, he's not good enough defensively for what they really need. But
what about Colorado alum? Well, I'm not sure he's alum because I don't know if he graduated. Andre Robertson.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I should have put him in here because he is someone who I think would fit pretty well. Especially because he can play as more of a four. He's got some bounce. He can like run some pick and roll as well as the four with some more spacing around them. Yeah, I think like he would definitely be someone where, I mean, if only just to make OKC feel the pain, you know, make him a pretty big offer. You might get him.
I totally believe that a Robertson, Juancho, Jokic frontcourt can work.
Yeah, there would be enough shooting. And if Jamal Murray is your one man, Harris is your two, you can get away with one non-shooter like Robertson for sure. And we don't have to see him just hang out in the corner and shoot threes off the side of the backcourt anymore. By the way, I don't know if have you listened to KD's podcast with Simmons?
Not yet.
I highly recommend it. I think it was like the 103 mark. It's like an hour and 30 minutes. The 103 mark, KD finally really gave to me the most cogent like basketball explanation where he felt like I wanted to feel like it was what it was like to actually just try to beat my guy one-on-one. And he talked about how most of the guys were like developing shooters or something like that. And like, so I was always going against 1.5 guys. There are guys that you were like willing to let shoot. And I was like, yeah, as soon as he came here, I was like, yeah, that's a big reason because, you know, Sam Presti, I thought really kind of failed to just put the right environment around him. So it was interesting to see. You know, I don't know whether KD is like puts the blame specifically on Sam or whoever, but you know, I thought that their roster really building around him, you know, could have been better. We no need to rehash that, but I thought that was interesting. And that's a good podcast worth listening to over the weekend if you haven't yet. Another guy who I actually think could be a pretty solid fit for them would be Serge Ibaka. And if they just let Plumlee go, I don't know. It seems like it's kind of fait accompli that he's going to go back to Toronto with former Nuggets GM Masai Ujiri, but he could start at the four next to Jokic, provide some shot blocking, and then just play your backup five as well. Now he wouldn't be able to do all like kind of the passing and stuff maybe that Plumlee can do, although if you gave him some reps at that, maybe it's possible he could get better at it. But he at least could space the floor and protect the room. I mean, they just have nobody on this team who can block a shot, and that was another reason why I mean Plumlee is like an okay rim protector if he's in position, but he's not scaring anybody. And I think that would be the other thing that I really think they need that I doubt they're going to go for because they have Plumlee, but someone who can protect the rim a little bit would be another interesting option there. And this is, I'm probably going to talk myself out of this very quickly, but like, what about an offer sheet for Nerlens Noel on this team?
I don't think you can play him and Jokic together.
I think you defensively, you can a little bit more, but yeah, I mean, with the lack of shooting, I mean, his shooting is no worse than Plumlee's. And defensively, it's a little better fit. But I mean, you're consigning him to have to guard on the perimeter, and that mutes some of his help defense. I agree. It's worth talking about. But I think, you know, but like, I think lower down, someone like a Jeff Withey would be a good fit here as a backup center. Like especially since you have Jokic, like that's the level of guy I'd be talking about. And you could always play Fareed or Darrell Arthur at backup center sometimes too, if you wanted just a more switchable lineup against a team that's not playing some great like post up backup center.
Yeah, totally on board.
Let's get to Lauri Markkanen now. 20 years old, excelled at the youth level in FIBA play for Team Finland. 7 foot, 225 pounds, but I think he has a pretty nice frame to where he could fill out to get a little bit stronger. Pretty short arms, though, and that's definitely a problem for him. But and the big appeal is just what an incredibly efficient shooter he is and a scorer overall. Shot 42% on threes. He made more threes than any NCAA 7-footer since 2000. 64% true shooting, and he also never turns it over. So he's just really, and he doesn't foul either. He's just an extremely efficient player, and that's really the appeal. And I think he can be a very, very solid offensive player. He strikes me, it's interesting because thinking about him, I was kind of down on just like the concept of him. And I watched his Draft Express video and before I really got into the film work with him, and especially having just watched these conference finals and these finals, you're like, well, this guy can't play in this series. Like, why would anybody draft him? And then it's like, oh yeah, there's 27 or 26 other teams in the league that could really use an offensive big man who can move his feet reasonably well. And it's just the question of whether he can get to just like not completely sucking defensively, and also a question of like what position he is defensively as well. What are your initial impressions of him, Danny?
He's going to make point guards very, very happy, because while I think that he is not as, he won't attack switches in the same way that somebody like Kevin Love can, or Nikola Jokic. We just talked about him, so he's on my brain a little bit, but he's so good as a pick and pop guy. And I was more impressed with his driving almost exclusively to his left, but I was more impressed with that than I remembered watching him at Arizona. And so I think that there's a way to use him offensively. I had the exact same thought in terms of, I don't know how this guy's going to play in an NBA finals. And then realized, how often are you drafting a guy outside the top five with that as being your primary goal? I mean, you're not drafting him to be your best player, and that's fine. He doesn't have to be. And
well, and not even, I mean, we talk about this NBA finals, like this NBA finals featured like two of the five best offenses of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these are just players who are totally unique, and there are a ton of them. There's so much shooting on the floor. There's no guarantee that 4 years from now, when the Warriors and Cavs have ceded to some of the other teams, that it's going to be like this, where just someone like, you know, a Kelly Olynyk or what Lauri Markkanen may be someday, just like can't, or even Kevin Love to some degree, can't stay on the floor. I mean, Kevin Love stayed on the floor fine against like Boston, for example, you know, and that we're going to see these lineups with just no players who don't shoot three-pointers on him. You know, that may not be the case at the highest levels. I do think he can be a fabulous offensive player. Like, his pick and pop is great. He can come off of screens. I'll give you some numbers on his shooting. In the pick and pop, he pops about 80% of the time, almost never rolled to the basket, but he played, I think, pretty much every minute with a traditional center, either Ristich or Chance Comanche generally. So he didn't have like a space floor to really work with. That also was an issue for him when he tried to post up on switches. They just didn't have the spacing to get the ball into him. I think when he actually got the ball, I was pleased with what he was able to do. And he fights hard in the post too, on switches. If they can get the space to lob it into him, then, you know, this team was not exactly bristling with passers either, this Arizona team. So he like fights hard, he gets position. If you lob it into him, he's able to make some plays. I was actually pleasantly surprised with what he was able to do in the post. He's got nice touch with a left-handed and right-handed jump hook. Not a power guy who's going to go through people necessarily, but pretty solid. But for example, he had 40 points on 33 possessions coming off screens, and that's mostly for threes. He shot 64% E field goal percentage coming off of screens. And even if he's playing at the four, that's a major problem. He can go to either side as well, come off screens to his right or left and shoot. You mentioned the drives to his left. When he drives on closeouts, he went left 36 times and right 6 times. So he definitely goes to his left, but he can create a little bit of space with that shoulder and shoot a pull up going to his left. You know, not like an amazing driver or anything, but enough that he can kind of get into the lane and take like kind of that 1 foot step across the lane and like find somebody else, you know, keep the spacing train moving, or just go in for a dunk if he's wide open. You know, he's got some ability to go one-on-one. I think he handled in 4 or 5 pick and rolls a little bit. I think if you just like had him ISO out of the top of the floor against a traditional center, he with his jump shot could be able to do that. He was kind of underutilized on like ISOs and in the post, not a surprise in college.
Well, so a point I wanted to make on that is his jump shot is good enough that he is going to get aggressive closeouts. And when you get aggressive closeouts, those really basic dribble things actually work. Those don't work if the team isn't as enthusiastic about closing out on you. This is an issue I've had sometimes with Aaron Gordon. But Lauri Markkanen, they're going to have to sell out because he has a high release and he shoots it reasonably quickly. So that opens up space for himself.
Yeah, and also you can talk about, you know, teams had some success switching on him. Like I said, I think part of that was due to the lack of spacing, but you know, I don't know if he's gonna just like, all right, I'm gonna go one-on-one against these guys or post up right under the rim necessarily. I think he can be effective there, and he's pretty composed with his ball skills. You know, he's not just like a stiff. But the other thing is, if you're gonna switch a 1-4 pick and roll and now he's gonna go stand in the corner for the rest of the possession, you want to have your point guard try to help on any other actions that are going on. You got no chance of closing out on him because he is so big and he has such a high release and a quick release that he's just going to get a good look in that backside corner once you switch someone who's smaller onto him. So that's something as well that I think he can be really effective at. I think, again, like his footwork, the speed of his release, all of it is very encouraging. He's going to get compared to Dirk, obviously. I mean, I think he even in some ways has a faster release than Dirk Nowitzki and shoots an easier ball from the three-point line. He's got plenty of NBA range, but he's not going to be the type of ISO player as Dirk is. Not as fluid getting to the basket, not as athletic as young Nowitzki, not a grab-and-go guy at all. I don't think he really had any possessions of that. Not going to run the floor, you know, and really do much getting to the rim as a guy running the lanes and transition. We didn't see much of that from him either. A few other notes on his offense. He's got a very nice left hand overall. He can dunk a little bit if he's in space, but he's definitely, especially off of 2 feet, he is a pretty limited athlete. If he's got a body on him, especially, he's not really going to be able to get up high. Doesn't get much extension. But you know, if he's got a smaller guy on him, that doesn't really matter when he gets his jump hook. He can kind of hit like short runners off the glass where it's not really a floater, but not quite a layup. You know, just kind of from like the lane line areas, running in and hitting like kind of a half floater, half layup off the glass. Like he's got that shot a little bit. He has a few moves in the post. He's got like a hook shot. He's got a same side up and under. Saw him try a couple of running hooks. And I thought his passing, he doesn't average a lot of passes, but when they straight doubled him in the post, I thought he made some pretty decent passes. He will pass well with his left hand. And can find the opposite big sometimes. He threw a couple of nice passes when he was doubled to the weak side or nice skip passes when, you know, against zones. So I don't think he's a great passer, but I think he can be totally capable in that role. And I think he'll get guys going backdoor every once in a while out of a DHO. I mean, I think he can be a totally capable handler on a DHO where then if you sell out to try to prevent that pass, he can spin and go to the basket. And obviously you got to get up on him because he'll just shoot that ball. He definitely needs more of a turnaround jumper game in the post. I'd like to, again, see him as more of an ISO guy as well. Can he, against a switch, turn and face and just shoot right over the top of guys? Like, that's what I really would like to see from him more than we got a chance to. But I mean, with his touch and how comfortable he is with the ball in his hands, I think that's something that could potentially develop.
Since I don't remember us mentioning it before, he is 20 years old right now. He just turned 20.
Yeah,
so
that right at the very beginning. But yeah.
Okay. So, but that we can go into the defense, and my big concern with him is, to use a phrase that you would deploy a lot more than I do, he doesn't play with force.
No, that's true. And he doesn't have the length to, really. I mean, that's the problem. Only averaged 1.0 blocks per 40, which is pretty terrible. I think he only had 3 blocks in conference play, which is very, very terrible. On the defensive glass, 17% defensive rebounds. He was playing with a traditional center, also had to guard a lot of guys in the perimeter. But, you know, he's in the film that I watched, he never had a rebound that I would have considered an impressive rebound. Doesn't really pursue the ball out of his area. Can't really get much bounce off of 2 feet. I mean, if you're going to get rebounds, you're going to do it in one of three ways. One is you just carve off so much space with your butt that you just control space and the ball falls to you. That's especially useful, more, I think, more even on the offensive glass sometimes. Like, that's what Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love do. Or you can just have such good bounce that that you can just like sky above everybody, even if you're not a great box out guy. He's not one of those guys. And then the other thing you can do is you just pursue really hard out of your area, and he's not that either. So it's really difficult to see him being a plus as a rebounder. That's not as important for fours as it used to be. But you definitely see him just not able to contest effectively either at the rim. He doesn't have great help instincts, or even on switches as well. I think it's his switching is interesting, and his guarding on the perimeter. He had to guard a lot of smaller players, stretch fours, and I thought he did an okay job of that. Like, he actually has pretty good feet. Like, if he sits down in a stance, like, you don't expect him to do it, and then he sits down in a stance and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, that's actually, like, he's moving his feet pretty good here. Like, he's staying in front of this guy, but then the guy can pull up for over him at the free throw line, and he just doesn't have the length to contest. He's very similar to another guy, you know, skilled big. I think he'll actually be a much better shooter than Kelly Olynyk, but that same problem. And he has better feet than Kelly Olynyk too, but Olynyk has better help instincts and better ability to just stay vertical at the rim than Markkanen has. But he just cannot get a hand up to contest. Like, there's a play where Nigel Williams-Goss, who is not really an NBA quality athlete, just like kind of drove to the basket on him, and Markkanen cut him off, and then Goss just went up with like a pretty inartful shot, and Markkanen like wasn't able to block it. You know, like, those are the types of plays you see all the time from him. But I do think his ability to move his feet is useful, and I think that at least, like, he's not like great at just getting in front of guys, especially because a lot of times he's guarding shooters too, so he's very few bigs can like crash into the lane and help and then like get back to shooters. They can kind of do one of the other, but I do think at least, you know, he kind of stunts towards guys. He's got active feet. He's engaged. You know, like, I think he's going to try. He's supposedly a great kid, was a great influence, you know, adjusted to being in the U.S., being in college extremely well. It's just that I don't ever see him being an average defender. I think he can maybe avoid being a liability in certain matchups. But you're definitely, if you're playing him, your plan is to kind of outscore people, I think.
So I think the big question there is the player that we've discussed, and I think we're pretty closely in line in terms of evaluating him in today's NBA. What is that guy? Is he a starter on a good team? Is he a starter on a bad team? Is he a backup on a great team? I'm more unsure of that part of it with him than with the analysis of what he is right now.
Yeah. Oh, one last thing to a couple of notes I had. Not very good defending in the post either. The lack of length is his issue. He can get ducked in. Not very good at like trying to front the post. Like, if he tries to like three quarter, he doesn't get around. He just ends up giving up like a straight line pass to the guy for a layup. So he's not playing him at center. I don't think it's going to work. He's just, I know he's 7 foot, but it would be very difficult for me to see him holding up there in more than just a few minutes. Maybe on the second unit, you could get away with it a little bit. But even then, I think he just... It could be problematic. I mean, maybe you'd probably be more likely to have him switch. I mean, he's better switching and guarding on the perimeter than I think he is doing some of the traditional big guy stuff, but that's a bit of a concern. Maybe he can get better at that. I mean, he does have a pretty decent standing reach. Like, he's tall, you know, maybe, and he's got good feet. So maybe he can just be a guy who can get his chest in front of guys and disrupt that way, even if he's not like blocking shots. But I mean, yeah, that shot blocking is like Cody Zeller, for example, who's never been a great shot blocker, has short arms. Zeller is much faster than him, like in transition, but maybe he could be effective and kind of that same way as Zeller, just as a poor man's version of that. But that is a rare bird to be sure. Yeah, I mean, I think he's been talked about maybe as going to Minnesota, where I think he'd be a wonderful offensive fit. He's sure as hell not helping their crappy defense, but they would be completely unstoppable, I think, if he can develop into being a solid player and you know, does all the things that we saw him do in college. I don't know. I mean, I think it's reasonable to think about taking him towards the lower end of the top 10. It's just, you're not, and I think he's going to be a very solid offensive player. He's probably going to be a guy who may be underrated because of how well the offense is going to run and how much space you have when you're playing him. But he's not, I don't see him as having superstar potential. Like, I mean, you basically would have to be Dirk Nowitzki offensively to be a superstar with what his defensive limitations are going to be.
Yeah, it's really hard for me with him because of the idea of center. And also, if you play him at center 99% of the time, I think the other team's just going to put their four on him, because whoever you're going to play play at power forward is going to be less formidable in terms of pick and pop and everything else like that. So you get into kind of the next position up version of the Paul George problem. And
right. And I don't see him. I don't see him being able to be that effective in the post against fours, even like modern day combo fours. I don't see him punishing those sorts of players. I think he's got to really get a switch to be effective. And I think he can be there. But yeah, it's I agree with you on that one for sure, that maybe they'll do that. But hey, you know, if you're you still have to have the other team center guarding, like, you know, someone else who in theory can shoot threes. So you're it helps, I think. I mean, and the level of spacing that he provides, I mean, you still can force switches. You can do a lot of stuff. I mean, he's a wonderful pick and pop player. I mean, like, I can't remember the last college big guy I saw who was this good at pick and pop.
Is there a particular team in the kind of 8 to 12 range? I can run through the squads. Knicks.
Yeah, just to refresh people's memory. Yeah, Knicks, I mean, they have Porzingis already. Doesn't seem like a great fit with him.
Mavs, Kings.
Yeah, I think a lot of these teams need point guards first. Maybe if the Kings have already picked up a point guard. I think the Wolves, like, it wouldn't be a terrible fit if I would rather have Jonathan Isaac for them. I guess maybe the bigger question to me is, I'm thinking of him as kind of in the same tier as, like, Josh Jackson and Jason Tatum. Completely different types of players, obviously.
You're thinking of Markkanen in that group?
Yeah, I am. I think just because, I know that what he's going to be. I know he's going to be a really good offensive player. I mean, well, I don't know that. You never know. But I strongly suspect that to be the case. Whereas those guys, I think they certainly have higher upside than Markkanen, just because of what their athleticism, their fit in the modern game, even though I question that for both those guys to some degree. People are just like, oh, these guys are wings. We want wings. You know, that's probably a little reductive. You can go back and listen to our scouting reports on those guys from earlier on to hear more on why we're not as high on them as some. By the way, I mean, what do you think of this whole, like, Josh Jackson could go like one or two?
That sounds to me like people who, you know, like, I think when I read, I think it was Chad Ford was the one who had that. He basically said Josh Jackson is a Danny Ainge guy. That's something by another GM or somebody like that. That's very different from saying Danny Ainge is going to take him over Markelle Fultz. And I always am kind of skeptical of that sort of thing. Like, yeah, he does sound like a Danny Ainge guy, but Markelle Fultz is special in a way that I haven't seen from Josh Jackson. But
yeah, and Josh Jackson is just especially old for a freshman. That's what's special about him.
Yeah.
He could be good, but, like, we don't believe in his shooting. We talked about it for a long time.
Yeah,
breakdown of him.
So we have a different set of opinion in Markkanen, not in terms of evaluation as a player, which I find fascinating. We agree, I think, pretty similarly on that. I have him below that kind of the second tier, or however we're defining it, the Jackson, Isaac, those kind of guys. I have him in a tier with Frank.
Oh yeah, I have him well below Isaac. Yeah.
Okay, with Ntilikina, I have him. I have Markkanen there, and then it's more beauties in the eye of the beholder. You know, kind of between those, whatever you need. And that's how tiers work for me. So the reason being that his defense is a concern, and I think that there's more of a chance that Tatum in particular figures it out on offense than that Markkanen figures it out on defense.
Yeah. If Tatum becomes like a real quality three-point shooter, which is not out of the realm of possibility, I think he's got to rework his form. We've heard reports of that. Shot it well from the foul line. If he becomes a real quality three-point shooter, then yeah, I would probably put him at the top of that group as well. But it's interesting. I mean, I probably would take those guys over him, but yeah, I'd have them kind of in the same tier. And then Ntilikina, yeah, again, maybe a little bit below some of these guys, but I like Ntilikina's fit a little bit more. But, you know, he's also like, is it really that useful to have a point guard who's like not that dynamic when you're picking in the top 10? Like, maybe not. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm not incredibly high on any of those guys. That's why, you know, I think I would have Dennis Smith above them. I probably have De'Aaron Fox above those guys as well. Jonathan Isaac above them. Like, that would my top five right now. I think I haven't looked at Monk yet, so I'm deliberately not mentioning him. Would be Fultz, Ball, Dennis Smith, Isaac, and probably Fox. Maybe switch Fox and Isaac. I'm not sure yet. But and Smith again, we with him in particular, got to make it clear that he is. That evaluation is based on just what I see on film, the injuries, some of the character stuff. I just don't have access to that. I can't really, you know, include that cogently in my evaluation.
I am deeply frustrated that our boards are so similar. because they weren't last year and that was fun. But I've been seeing these guys in a similar way. I want to watch, if we're going to have the time, I don't think we're necessarily going to do a podcast on him, but I want to watch Zach Collins now. Watching Markkanen made me want to think about, okay, how are these guys similar? How are they different? What is Collins? I mean, I know they're very different as prospects, but Markkanen, because we just hadn't done any guys that were really like on the big side, you know, Isaac's kind of different. So now I'm like, oh, I want to see that, because see him. He's kind of like the only other player in that range who fits that bill, but I don't think we need to do a podcast on him. But yeah, I'm getting excited for this draft, because it is a lot of that beauty is in the eye of the beholder circumstances. And I think those are what lead to fun drafts, and more importantly, in some ways, lead to good summer leagues and then rookie seasons. Because if you have players that are in a similar level, teams are going to be, especially at the high end of that tier, they're going to pick the guy that fits the best with them, that they like the most. And so those guys will probably be put in very good situations.
All right, I think that'll do it for today. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back Sunday nights. Gonna hope to have Mike Schmitz on from Draft Express at some point next week. We got the draft as well. Then we still got to do Malik Monk and roll through some of these other off seasons as well. We still want to do a podcast as well on potential extension candidates now that the extension rules have been changed for this off season. But that is all to come. So stay tuned. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.